Okay, wake me up when the Monaco episode's over, okay, Dre?
I'll wake you up when Kimi Antonetti fails to win a race. That might be sometime. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Wait, what happened?
Yeah, he won again. This is starting to become a problem. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 662 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us again on the back half of part one of this monster recording 24-hour window of fun. And in this edition, we are going to talk the Monaco Grand Prix. And, well, normally we're down on Monaco a lot these days, and rightly so. It's kind of an outlier for all the wrong reasons in Formula One these days. But if nothing else, in this year's edition, we got some mess. And everybody loves a bit of mess in their motorsport every once in a while. Isn't that right, RJ O'Connell?
That's right, dog. And look, Dre, I just think that it's neat that you brought me in to record two-thirds of the Triple Crown of Motorsport together. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I know the definition of Triple Crown of Motorsport is malleable because sometimes the F1 leg is the Monaco Grand Prix, sometimes it's the World Championship. I just say I'm too delirious to think about it right now because it is literally midnight in France. Go back and listen to our Le Mans preview. Yes, I'm still in France.
He's still here. He will be for another week or so. But he did catch some Monaco, so it's only fair that we talk about it now.
Well, so was everybody else in the Le Mans media room, by the way. So it's
I can imagine.
Yeah.
It's just down the road, isn't it? The big headlines, Kimi Antonetti wins his fifth Grand Prix in a row, which is something that if you'd said to me it would have happened a year ago, I'd have said you were on narcotics. But the real story is everything that went on behind them, and we have a lot to discuss in regards to that. The title game, Ferrari having a good day but also a bad one at the same time, and some of the internal politics in regards to that. Penalties. More penalties than a Champions League final. Some given, some not given, some taken, some not taken, said to even more penalties. A potential point for Cadillac that goes asunder due to, as mentioned, a penalty. And some engine upgrade talk as well, because the FIA is holding out, but apparently the teams know something that we don't in regards to the ADUO program and what it means for the state of the field. All of that and more in the next hour or so. But before then, let's discuss where you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. This podcast is on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you have to follow our personal handles on Blue Sky, you can at RJ O'Connell and at dreharrison.bsky.social. The pod is also on Instagram for video highlights at motorsport101. It's also on TikTok at m101_podcast. You can check us out on there as well. If you really like us as well, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all our episodes. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Kira and Jason are doing so right now. Thank you for sticking around, folks. And all of those details and more are available on our website, motorsport101.com. Lovely. Right. Without further ado, let's try and break down what happened at the Monaco Grand Prix.
I mean, this weekend was wild from the get-go. It's the Monaco Grand Prix. It used to be part of Day of Classics until it wasn't. We moved it on the calendar, and now it's in June, and it's kind of weird, but it's here now, and Ferrari fans were really snorting the copium after finishing a 1-2, an FP1, and FP2. But then Mercedes found that speed overnight as Kimi Antonelli took his fourth pole position of the season by just 0.04 of a second over Max Verstappen in the Red Bull Ford?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And if Max Verstappen gets a good launch here, I mean, we know the Mercedes struggles off the line, and Max Verstappen, all he needs is a good launch to potentially break through and win the first Grand Prix for Red Bull Ford, and his engine dies off the line with the lights out, and away we don't go in the case of Verstappen. So Antonelli got a free pass to Sandoval. No heroics needed. Went to work ahead of the Ferraris of Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc. First 28 laps were pretty quiet. Typical Monaco fare, apart from Isaac Hadjer battling George Russell with deployment problems and Lando Norris retiring with an engine failure of his own on McLaren's 1,000th Grand Prix. 1,000th is really just a concept that it's up to you to decide, really.
A quick side note on this one. It technically isn't McLaren's 1,000th race, and I think they knew that because this was technically their 999th Grand Prix because they had a double did not start in China. So technically, they didn't take part in that race, even if they were on the entry list. So I think they knew that because they're also going to be running this 1,000th race livery in Spain this weekend. So I think there's a little bit of internal guilt that they knew that this was going to be happening, because normally these sorts of liveries and brand deals and activations are normally planned out like months in advance. So I think it's technically their 1,003rd race as in they've been on the entry list. Technically it's 1,002 according to Kira in the chat, but when it comes to double DNSs and other fuckery, it's more like 999. Whatever, it's a concept. Roll with it.
Right. So then we get to lap 60. Lance Stroll hits the wall at Anthony Nose, bringing out a safety car. After more pit stop confusion, we set up for a restart, but then Charles Leclerc went into the same wall that Stroll hit, bringing out a 35-minute red flag to tend to broken asphalt entering the final quarter. This then sets up an 8-lap standing restart for the checkered flag. And Kimi Antonelli was still untouchable ahead of Lewis Hamilton. And Pierre Gasly finished third for the nearest thing he get to a home podium. And nope, he had 10 seconds of penalties for speeding in the pit lane twice. That dropped him to 7th. Kimi becomes the youngest ever Monaco winner. And he does it with a grand salami. Get out the rye bread and the mustard, Grandma.
The youngest man to ever have a Grand Slam in Formula One at age 19, the youngest to ever do a Grand Slam at Monaco. And that is his 5th win in a row, and he now has a 66-point lead in the championship.
Hey, if he wins one more race, he ties George Russell's career wins total.
He's more than halfway to Charles Leclerc. And Leclerc's done. This is year 9 for Charles.
He just signed an extension.
He signed an extension this weekend, which allegedly takes him to 2031.
Wow.
Apparently Leclerc's got 5 years left of this.
Holy Moses. That's all? I mean, you put it out here. Kimi Antonelli, odds on favorite to win the title now with at 5-1 odds.
It's 5-1 on, which is a nice way of saying 1-5. That's an implied probability with the bookies at 80%.
Wow.
You know, if you would have guessed going into this year that after 6 races, Antonelli would be a 1-5 championship favorite, I would have called you crazy. This is, I don't think even Antonelli's biggest fans. And there was a lot of admirers from his time as far back as Frecca would have ever thought that he'd be this so quickly.
I'll just leave this in the words of legendary accredited Formula One journalist Spencer Hall. Quote, Kimi is too young to know he can't do this.
Yeah. He's had 30 career starts and he's won 5 of them. Lewis Hamilton had never won more than 5 in a row across his career. Antonelli's done that in year 2.
It's justifying the toughest decision that Mercedes ever had to make in this era. It's paying off handsomely, and like, you just wonder, what is the rest this year going to look like for Kimi Antonelli? How much of this can he possibly keep up? Because surely there's no way he wins out the rest of the season, right?
No. And, well, it's weird in the sense of, as mentioned, Friday, it looked like Ferrari were the favorites going in. I mean, Lando Norris had been very candid in saying that, well, look, the way Ferrari's calibrated, they should be winning here. And I agreed. I thought, well, hang on, smaller turbo, less turbo lag. They can put the power down a little bit earlier. Ferrari typically have great mechanical grip. They have proven to be good in that sort of low to medium downforce kind of track where they're hard to pass already, and this is Monaco. Everything was suggesting that Ferrari were going to be strong, and on Friday, it looked like that was proving to be right. And then overnight, Mercedes and Red Bull just found something. Like, because Antonelli from Saturday on was just completely untouchable. Max was the only one that was close.
You know what this feels like? It feels like one of those specials where, like, yeah, Ferrari's fast, and then everybody else turns up the pace come Saturday.
Yeah, that it's like the reverse of what Mercedes had been until this year, where it's like, hey, Merckx are quick, maybe Merckx can get some, maybe Hamilton can get a win, and then Saturday happens, and then Max just turns up and then beats the field's arse. This was the opposite of that. This was Mercedes operationally finding something overnight on Friday, and then once Antonelli's got the car underneath him, he's perfect. Autosport gave him the rare 10 out of 10 stamp on his weekend, and I fully agreed with it because he was perfect. From Saturday onwards, he did not put an inch wrong. This kid is 19. And I think Spencer summed it up perfectly. He's too young to know what fear looks like. He just cracked on. He just ran laps. In race trim, sometimes he's a second a lap quicker than everybody else. He was magnificent. This was the most complete weekend he's ever had at F1.
And to do it in Monaco, like, I know as fans and as pundits, we don't get that jazz about the Monaco Grand Prix, but a lot of the drivers still do. It still really means a lot to win the Monaco Grand Prix. Kimi Antonelli just did that.
And he made it look laughably easy. The biggest compliment I can pay him is that if you did not know any better, you would never have guessed that is a 19-year-old who's only had 30 career starts in the top flight.
Yeah.
He drove that like a veteran, and he did not put an inch wrong. That was an 8-lap standing restart to close out that race. He had a 6.5-second lead at the flag. No one could touch him at full chat. No one was even close. It also goes to show you as well that this Mercedes package is another all-timer. Let's not forget, it doesn't feel like it, but Mercedes are 6-for-6 on the year so far, and they have not really been close to being beaten yet by anybody else.
Although, George Russell out of the points. What's happening here? So, I mean, we were talking about this, like, we talked about on our last episode, that this feels like, you know, this is going to be George Russell's year to finally break through and win that championship. Surprise, surprise. He gets usurped by Kimi Antonelli. But to not even score points?
It's funny. I got a lot of people, when he put the video short out about Russell and the scrappy nature of his career last time out, I had a lot of Russell fans saying that he was going to figure this out. This is just a blip. I completely understand why people thought like that. It's understandable. He's George Russell. He's an elite driver in this series. You know, you'd think he would figure this out. But his weekend went to shit from Saturday, really. He was out-qualified by Kimi by 4 temps. He had to start on row 3, which is not ideal. No one has won off the top 3 at Monaco, I think, for something like 40 years. He is stuck behind Isaac Hadjar early on, who had deployment issues for the entire race coming off his battery. He was really limping at one point round there. He was shouting at his engineer to figure something out for the whole Grand Prix. It works out in the end, but George gets the undercut and comes out in front of Hadja when they take what we think was going to be their one mandatory stop for the race, because the two mandatory stop rule got scrapped for this year after last year's mess. And he gets done for speeding in the pit lane. He's not the only one. Five people got caught out for this. We'll talk about it a little bit more later. But there was a fundamental error. When that safety car comes out on lap 60 for Lance Stroll, a lot of guys will come in for a stop, slap some soft tires on because they don't want to potentially get caught out on fresh rubber. George Russell's in a double stack with Kimi because he's been lapped by Kimi, which is already wild enough as it is. And there's confusion on the pit wall that because Russell is in the queue to get into his box and he sat there for 5 seconds, Mercedes, for some reason, thinks that means they've served the time penalty. That is not the case. It has to be in the box. So when he eventually pulls in for a stop, they work on the car straight away. That means they've not served the penalty correctly.
Oh dear.
Classic F1 rule, if you do not serve a penalty properly, it is upgraded, and it was upgraded to a drive-through penalty. It was declared during the red flag we got after Leclerc hits the wall. It's a DTP. He has to take it on the green flag condition because it was standing restart, and it drops him out of the points. It is a catastrophic mistake from Mercedes pit wall. It's the second year in a row they've completely fucked it. Because this happened last year as well, where Russell had a drive-through penalty because Toto Wolff forgot there was a two mandatory stop rule. And they remembered right at the end, and it almost caused beef between him and James Vowles, which was resolved. But just, when it rains, it pours for George. I mean, we were coming off the battery failure last week in Canada, and now this. Back-to-back donuts, back-to-back races, Kimi's won. It was a 17-point lead going into Canada. It's now a 66-point. He's now 68 points back, because actually, Hamilton's now second in the championship.
That's right.
Russell's now third in a two-Honts race.
Another good weekend for Lewis Hamilton.
Broke one of his own records. He's tied with Ayrton Senna. It's his eighth Monaco podium finish. Only Ayrton also has eight. And fun fact, he was older than both of the other drivers on said podium combined.
That's right. Hadra's 20. Antonelli's 19. Hamilton is 20. It's Hamilton's 41.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Hamilton's 41. But what's this I hear about Hamilton getting some extra help? And for that matter, why is Charles Leclerc so wound up? He just signed an extension.
This is a messy one. This was originally reported by the Italian division of the Motorsport Network, as well as Auto Racer over in Italy, one of the more prominent journalistic motorsport guys over in Italy that's reported on this. The revelation, and it's not quite broken out amongst the really heavy hitters yet, is that behind the scenes, Fred Vasseur has gone out of his way to change an element of the braking system on specifically Hamilton's car.
Right.
For those who don't know, Ferrari has had a 50-year partnership with Brembo, because there's only two brake suppliers in Formula One. I think half the field, like five teams are on Brembo brakes. Six of them are on Carbon Industries, who are the other major brake supplier in Formula One. So it's literally, they're the only two suppliers in Formula One. Ferrari's had Brembo for 50 years now. It's literally been a 50-year-long partnership.
It makes sense. They're both Italian, right?
They're both Italian. And what they were reporting here basically is it seems that Fred Vasser has gone out of his way under the table to basically, I think it's the pads themselves that are now carbon as opposed to Brembo. Because they're not going to split supply and have some kind of hybrid system in there. But allegedly, that's what Ferrari has done under the table. They were trialed and acquired on the down low. They may, I mean, it's certainly not a great look for Brembo, who had to release quite a defensive statement after Leclerc put his car in the wall. Leclerc said, I'm not taking the blame for this one. The brakes have been shit all weekend. He claimed that only one of them was working when he had the accident. His front left was fine. Apparently his front right was at like 50%. Apparently his rear brakes were not working, period.
Ooh.
And after the safety car, basically he could not get heat back into the brakes again. Now, an element of this is the 2026 cars in general. The way that energy is being managed, it's a lot more is going into harvesting for the battery. There's less energy to go around for the rest of the car. There's not as much energy going to the brake axles, the rear brake axles, to keep them hot and keep them in their operating window. So drivers have got to work a little bit harder to keep heat in them. So apparently when the safety car happened, Leclerc could not get his rear brakes back in that window again. And they weren't working properly. And that's what he thinks led to him putting the car in the wall at Anthony Noakes. When the moment he gets up to full racing speed. Bang.
It's just so Ferrari, man. Leclerc gets to break the Monaco curse once, and then they just decide, you know what? Once is enough.
Never again.
Suffering builds character at Camp Leclerc.
It really is. And so
he's give his entire prime of his career to this team. This team.
I mean, we'll tie this in neatly to the fact that Leclerc did announce that he signed the contract extension with Ferrari again. He already had a deal in place until 2029. He already had the longest deal in the paddock, allegedly, and he's extended it by another 2 years, according to John Noble at the race, which means he is, by a country mile, the longest extended contract in Formula One. I don't think anybody's tied down longer than 2028 elsewhere. I think Piastri's until 28. I think that's the longest out there. Anyone's got a guaranteed contract until. Charles is going to be at Ferrari till 2031 at minimum.
That's his. He turns 34 that year. Charles Leclerc is going to be at Ferrari longer than any other Ferrari Formula One driver has ever been at Ferrari F1 ever. Ever.
I think next year he overtakes Michael for overall appearances, and he was already number one.
Someday it's got to come right for him, right? I mean, he's driving so well. There's been new elements to his game, but every time it just goes to shambles, dog.
I feel bad for him because it's like we always dogpile him when he makes his one big mistake for the year. It turns into like a berry job, and it hasn't helped that Hamilton has had back-to-back second-place finishes when Leclerc was nowhere in Canada. And again, I think now we know why he was struggling in Canada so bad, because again, really cold Grand Prix that was in Canada. Now, we've had back-to-back rounds where he struggled with his brakes, and now we seemingly know the reason why, while at the same time, Fred Vasser has gone under the table to facilitate Lewis Hamilton, who a lot was said last year that he was struggling with his brakes and getting used to working with Brembo for the first time after 12 years of Carbon Industries brakes when he was at Mercedes. Fred is a driver's guy. He always has been. He's known Lewis for 20 years. I know a lot of Ferrari fans were quite heated when this story dropped on Monday, because it feels like a desperation heave to placate Lewis. who, again, people have talked about his future a lot. He's been very adamant. Yeah. He's here for the long haul. He's not going anywhere. He's got that driver option for 2027, which I no doubt he will take. You know, Lewis said 5 more years in Canada, you know. And if you're Ferrari, when you've put $50 million a year into this guy, you kind of want him to win.
Yeah.
Even when Charles has now been there long enough that he's basically part of the furniture. This is year 8 for Charles at Ferrari. His 9th year in F1, period. He's getting close to 200 starts.
That in itself is frightening. It's kind of a messy way to just like bring the whole team closer together. You know, like this is ideally what you want is for Charles and Lewis to be more evenly matched. They certainly weren't last year.
No.
This year it is a bit more even, but it's all just messy in the way they handle it. It's like to kind of just like tick off a 50-year partner of the team.
It would be the Ferrari way, wouldn't it? It would be. Just what's the messiest way we can potentially solve this problem? I know. Let's change brake suppliers under the table for the sake of our £50 million a year golden talent that John Elkann couldn't help but throw under the bus a year ago.
Oh, great, man. I think what they should do is they should add a third for Scuderia Ferrari entry that is privately entered but gets all the same resources. But they never let it win when they have the opportunity to let either Charles or Lewis win. Go back to our Le Mans preview to listen more for similar stories. Potentially, we got to talk about penalties too. And in one in particular, it's just, we were so close to our first Cadillac point of the season, but no, we just can't have it.
Okay, welcome to the Dre Harrison breaks down the penalty segment of this game. It's like Ref Watch on Sky Sports Football after a week of the Premier League where former ref Dermot Gallagher shows up and says, this should have been a penalty. This shouldn't have been a penalty. This wasn't a red card. This may have been a red card. Right, this was the messiest race for penalties I can remember in a long, long time. Now, as mentioned earlier, 5 drivers got dinged for 6 speeded in the pit lane infractions over the course of this race. They were Lewis Hamilton, they were George Russell, Oscar Piastri, Franco Colapinto, and Pierre Gasly. Gasly actually did it twice over the course of this race. Ooh. Now, everybody was asking, well, why is it that there's been so many speeding in the pit lane penalties? You might get one in a Grand Prix on a rare occasion, but you're never going to get 5 or 6 at once on the board. Like the timing tower was a sea of red exclamation points. So why was this? There was a reason. For those who don't know, we do have 11 teams in Formula One now. Cadillac
finally
is here. Yay! Cadillac is here. And well, with that means there was more of a space on the inside of the pit lane because you've got to have space in front of the garage to pit stop your cars, obviously. What the drivers were doing were they were cutting the fast lane en route to the pit exit. Now, why would that be a problem? Well, the way that Formula One and the FIA measures pit lane average speed is via timing loops and transponders. The cars have all got transponders, as we obviously know, and they have timing loops in the pit lane to measure average speed. They're a lot like, as Bernie Collins pointed out on the Sky broadcast, the average speed check cameras you get in the UK on motorways. So there's a timing loop, and they will measure the distance taken or the time taken to get to those 2 points, and they'll work out an average that way. Because they were cutting elements of the track to get out of the pit lane, even if their limiter was on at 60 kilometers an hour, which is the pit lane speed limit at Monaco, because it's taken them a shorter amount of time to get to the exit, that lifts the average speed up, even if your limiter was on the entire time.
Mm.
And that is why there were so many speeding in the pit lane penalties, because they were telling drivers during the race, don't cut the line, because that you're risking a penalty. And unfortunately, a lot of people did not heed that message. And that is why there were so many speeding in the pit lane penalties. And in for Pierre Gasly, it doubly hurt because he did it twice. He did it once during his mandatory stop, and he did it again when he was coming in for the safety car stop on lap 61. He hadn't served the original one yet, so he was given 10 seconds total, and he was third over the line. He actually celebrated like he'd got a podium finish for Alpine, which would have been an incredible result. Even though he'd been told in the pit lane he's had two penalties, he forgot when he crossed the line, and then he heard the heartbreak of, no, wait. You got to go to Parc Fermé. You're not on the podium. We had 10 seconds of penalties to serve. He actually finishes seventh. Now, Alpine has lodged a right to review on this. We'll be hearing that on Thursday. They're not getting it. I just need to.
You know the meme of the guy that's trying to chase down the balloon and the big red guy that comes up behind him and just like holds him around the waist?
Yeah.
Gray guy looks behind him, is just like, that's Pierre Gasly looking at his chances of a Monaco Grand Prix podium, a third place finish for Alpine, and it all just dissipates. He drops down to seventh. We still have a French guy on the podium. It's Isaac Hadjer, but it could have been Pierre Gasly, you know. By the way,
yeah,
Racing Bull's fifth and sixth out of all this is a very solid result.
Yeah, I think it's their best team result in quite some time. Yeah, they both got Liam Lawson matches his career high finish in fifth. Arvid Lindblad was there in sixth as well. They had a double jump in the sea to celebrate the occasion. Great result for Racing Bulls as a result of all that mess. Good for them. Also worth saying, this penalty segment is multifaceted. Just to clarify, Alpine have already kind of admitted behind the scenes they're not winning that right to review. I think they just kind of want what the plan is here written down for clarity's sake. They're losing their deposit on that right to review. I can tell you that right here. And now, this is a fun one, RJ. Did you know that during the red flag that we got, at a certain point, because of the deployment problems he was having, Isaac Hadjer's car is being changed by the Red Bull mechanics. They're trying to change the spark plugs in his power unit. An FIA scrutineer taps them on the shoulder and goes, "You're not allowed to do that. You don't realize
that,
right?"
Can't do that.
Red Bull very quickly reverts the car back to the old specification. This incident was referred to the stewards. Hadjer had to go to the stewards on a red flag infringement, basically. But was cleared.
And why was he cleared, Trey Harrison?
He was cleared because the car was in the exact same state that it was when the red flag was called. Simply put, I don't love or hate this decision. I just find it interesting that Red Bull got away with that, because motorsport, normally touching a car under red is one of the biggest no-nos in the book.
Exactly.
And basically, the scrutineer pointed out that this was a rule break, but it's like you were attempting to change the spark plugs on the car, but you don't get dinged for that. There's nothing in the rule book to say you can't change the spark plugs without, as long as you put them back with the way they were before, it's fine.
They're closing that loophole crazy, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and one more in the penalty game segment, because you mentioned it briefly. Sergio Perez, who sadly picked up not one but two penalties in the course of this race, both the original start and the standing restart, he was out of the box. The first time round, the original start, Gabriel Bortoleto didn't take the grid. He had to start from pit lane because he had technical problems with his car. They had to recycle the battery. Naturally, that means you just leave your slot empty. But Checo went into Bortoleto's slot. Not allowed. Out of position on the grid. Penalty. They were still on to get 10th place on the road. But then on the second restart after the red flag, he's too far forward in his box. And I looked at the replay. He wasn't even close. He was way over. Sergio Perez is a veteran with nearly 300 starts.
He's won this race before. And I find it ironic that, like, his old teammate, Nico Hülkenberg, got a 10-second time penalty for causing the collision with Carlos Sainz. And that would have helped Sergio Perez move from 11th to 10th, get Cadillac's first point of the season. And it all comes to nothing, by the way. And once again, Cadillac having to refute rumors that Valtteri Bottas' seat is in jeopardy very soon.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have caught on to Bottas' poor start to the year and have put two and two together and put nitroglycerin on it and said it's 22. Graham Lowndes.
Hit me.
You have 20, sir. I'm looking for that blackjack. Graham Lowndes had to shut that down really quick a week before we got to Monaco.
I love aggregators, like, don't you?
I do find it a trifle concerning that two race weekends in a row, we've had to have team principals angrily come out and defend their drivers off the back of aggregators reporting that their drivers are going to be cut mid-season. Because this was Ayo Komatsu at Canada over Esteban Ocon.
Uh-huh.
And Komatsu swore like a fucking sailor. Like, apparently...
He swore like his predecessor.
Like, 17 swear words in a rambling speech to the media saying that it was fucking bullshit that this was all going down.
I thought Gunther left the team. I thought he was fired.
He's still here in spirit. That as Kira puts in the chat, that is the rambling rant of a man who was definitely raised in Coventry. As a guy who's got family in Nottingham, let me tell you that is absolutely valid, because Nottingham is literally just up the road from Coventry. But yes, he swore like a sailor, and in Loudon had to basically shut down the rumors that Bottas is getting cut mid-season, saying that these drivers have got to develop the car just as much as they have to drive it. And that's a really hard thing to do for a brand new team. And there's no way they're talking about making a driver change yet. I think there's still rumblings in the air that Colton Herta might be in that seat next year. Cause even if the F2 thing doesn't work out, they can just give him six FP1s and he can get to 40 super license points that way. He's on 35 right now. He loses one for finishing 10th in IndyCar in 2023. So if he does six FP1s, that gets you to 40 points. So if they really want Colton in the car, they can do that.
They'll just give him the FP1s because it's not coming out of the F2 results.
Yeah, it's not working out there right now. Not at the moment anyway. He's not going to get in the top 10 the way he's driving right now, unfortunately. But we'll see how that goes. So as a result of Perez dropping from 10th to 15th, Fernando Alonso inherits P10. Aston Martin are on the board with a point.
Okay. Hey, remember when this team is being talked about as like a imminent title threat because they had Honda and because Adrian Newey designed the car and now he's team principal?
Yeah, and this was the first race weekend that Newey was in the paddock for the first time since Australia. I think, bless him, the Daily Mail reported that he had a bad case of pneumonia, which is the reason why he's not been with the team. So I'm glad that Newey is back and seemingly healthy, which is always good to hear.
Okay.
That man's been through it. That man has been through it. Let's not forget, he is 68 years old. He's a bit old to be doing this whole traveling to every round thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a nice shot in the arm for Aston to get a point. It also makes it really hard for Kadat to get off the bottom now, because that's a hell of a tiebreaker to get that one single point. It means that it's likely Cadillac will have to get two now to take 10th place. Oh, yeah. Worth pointing out, for all the hype, Audi only has 2 points so far this season.
It was such a good start to the season. It was a really good start to the year, and now what's happened?
I think reality has hit them quite quickly in that, yeah, Bortoletto got 2 points in Australia, the opening round, by finishing ninth. They showed really good pace, but they've had a lot of technical gremlins since then, a lot of power unit issues, a lot of power unit failures, a lot of battery failures, a couple of fires in Miami as well, let's not forget. It's been messy. I think the honeymoon period for Audi is certainly over now, and this was a really good weekend on paper for them. They looked really quick. They were looking like they could get both cars in Q3.
Brought a special livery and everything.
Yeah, the new Velari Yellow came back. That was neat.
To celebrate the launch of the new Audi new Velari concept. It's definitely not a Temerario with Audi badges on it.
Definitely not. No, unique design, etc. No, but just a rough weekend for Audi there when they had a really golden chance to get some points and distance themselves from that wooden spoon chase. And now they're right in it because Aston fluked a point. That can happen in F1 sometimes, and they got lucky and they hit the jackpot. Their car is junk, but they've now got a point to show for it.
It really is still junk.
Yeah. And before we go,
yeah,
people have been mentioning this as well. The FIA ADUO program, the additional upgrade and development program that they have, it's rumored that the first list is due to come out later this week. Apparently the teams already know what's on the list. And it says on my notes here that the best ICE is Red Bull? Oh, boy.
There's going to be some Ford people. They're just like, yeah, Ford makes the best engines. Woohoo!
This is a weird one in that the FIA, the way they've done this is that if you're more than 2% behind what they think is the best power unit on the grid, you're allowed one power unit upgrade for the rest of the year. And if you're more than 4% behind, you get two, basically. They determine that Red Bull is the number one team on for power units right now. I believe Mercedes and Ferrari are now due to get one upgrade because they're more than 2% off the top.
So hold on. The best team in Formula One that has gone perfect is going to get an engine upgrade.
Yep.
Damn, that's crazy.
And Honda and Audi are going to get two because they're more than 4% behind, basically. Audi and Honda is not a surprise. Audi didn't want an MGUH on these power units because they're expensive, so they'll always kind of be working behind in that regard. Honda has struggled since coming back. We've talked about it before. Honda's not the Honda we thought it was going to be 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It goes to show you, if nothing else, that just having the best power unit doesn't mean you're going to be successful. Because right. Red Bull have got a good ICE, but it's not a reliable one. And Red Bull are clearly losing out in other ways for things like battery, things like deployment, things like drivability of the car and the chassis. That's where their issues are. And
once Verstappen's car stalled off the grid, the number of people around me that were just like, well, that settles it. Verstappen's going to sports cars next year.
Oh,
I see a Ford hypercar with your name on it, pal.
I think there's a lot of people that just kind of want Max to retire so they seriously can get the rub of having Verstappen in it, which I guess feels nice and what have you. But Max has basically said that if they are going to 60-40 on power delivery, he'll stick around, which I think they ultimately will. But
yeah,
it's not nailed on yet, which is a bit weird. But apparently there's not as much support for it as they thought there was, which... There you go. That's Monaco, pretty much in a nutshell. Antonelli owns assholes. George Russell is struggling with adaptability problems, which we'll talk about probably a bit more during Barcelona if this holds up.
The Knicks are in the finals. They may be out of it soon, or they may win it. Who knows? Despite all the best efforts to ruin the vibes of it all.
Indeed. Vibes, glorious vibes. We'll be back for Formula One as we review the newly named Barcelona Catalunya Grand Prix this weekend from, surprise, surprise, Catalunya, which is sticking around as a rotational round on the calendar now. It's not going away entirely. So every other year we're going to get two Spanish Grand Prix as opposed to one, with the Madring due later on this year. It actually looks like an actual track now, which, yay, that's a plus. So we'll be reviewing that next week alongside our review of Le Mans. So that'll be on the docket soon. Until then, though, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been RJ O'Connell. He's finally about to get some sleep, the poor fucker. We'll catch you next time. Thank you very much for listening and watching. Sayonara.
Bon week, y'all.